It is March 10th, 2005. My name is Mandy Mason, M-A-N-D-Y, M-A-S-O-N, and I'm going to interview Betty Tucker for the Weber State Technology at Weber State University project. Betty, can you please state your name and your place and date of birth?
My name is Betty Tucker. I was born at Delta, Utah, 92149.
Okay. What were your parents' occupations?
My mother was a homemaker, and so mostly stayed at home, although she had a few part-time jobs off and on when I was growing up. My father was primarily a beekeeper, and then did some bricklaying on the side.
Oh.
So he's a brick mason.
Oh, that's interesting. Where did you get your education? How did you come to end up north?
I actually, graduated from Delta High School. And I had a good friend a year older than I was who was going to Weber State. And she convinced me to come up and go to Weber State. So 1 week after I graduated from high school, the summer after I graduated then, I came up to Weber State. And the reason I started in the summer was because she was actually on the drill team and wanted me to try out, which I did, and then was on the drill team for a brief time.
Oh. How long have you worked at Weber?
I've worked at Weber for 18 years. The last 3 years have been teaching in the academic department. But before that I was in the, originally in the student tutor. It was what they call student support now. I hired tutors. And then also took over a couple of labs, and then when they were going to divide those responsibilities, and I went with the lab side of things.
So. Okay. And so how long ago did you start working on the help desk?
That was exactly 10 years ago. Well, 9 and a half years ago. I went on a sabbatical. Actually, it was administrative leave because I wasn't a professor or instructor. Went on administrative leave for a year to get my master's degree. And while I was gone, in fact, right when I left, they hired the new CIO, Don Gardner. And then toward the end of that year of sabbatical, I received an email from him asking if I would be willing to start the help desk, start the support center, if you will. And so we had a couple of emails, and then I did talk to him once on the phone. And then when I got back in August of 95, then I started right in on that. When I left, I had been the supervisor over student labs and kind of coordinated the efforts between all of the labs on campus. Not all of them were open labs for every student. A lot of them were private department labs and specialized labs. And so for a long time before that, they all just acted independently. And when I took the main responsibility of the computer labs, then I worked with the other labs so that we were all knew what each other was doing, tried to coordinate the efforts so that we were, for instance, purchasing software together, those kind of things. So that when I left, I had been doing that. And when I came back, they asked me to do the support center.
And did you have students working with you, or was this just an administration effort?
When I first began, there was a lot of support going on around campus, but it wasn't centralized. It wasn't very well advertised, in fact. So when I came, they were going to give me several months to kind of make a proposal. I started working on getting the information and finding out what support we already had on campus, what we needed, how to organize it. And within weeks, I mean literally, it's probably by the end of the month, people are pounding on your door saying, I hear you're doing this, I need help. And those that were giving computer support were just overwhelmed. And they were wanting me to take over the phone calls that were coming in, and sorting out the jobs and whatnot. So almost immediately, probably within 6 weeks, we hired a student assistant that would work with me. But and that grew very quickly because it was so successful, just even the one. So I felt like I kind of backed into the operation rather than making the proposal and then moving ahead, mostly because of the need.
How many students did you end up having working there?
Well, we kept adding them, and eventually it was anywhere between a dozen and 18 student technicians. They created a separate department within a few months and brought over, let's see, I had three full-time people working for me, and then anywhere from 12 to 18 student technicians. You know, they're kind of a transient bunch because they graduate and go on to full-time jobs, and so at any given time, there was between that many.
Mm-hmm. And what was, so you took calls for technical support, is there anything else that...
Well, we took the calls. One of the full-time staff created a database, an in-house one that we could keep track of the requests, because you write them on paper, hand them out to somebody, and then you don't know what the heck's going on with things.
Mm-hmm.
So we started recording it in a database, and that was pretty quickly. Now it seems like almost at once, but I'm sure it was a few months before mm-hmm. we had that going, and that way we could do reports as well. Mm-hmm. So we did have a student on the desk most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes no one was there at the desk answering those phone calls. And but eventually there was a student there on the desk all the time during the working hours of the day,
mm-hmm.
the regular working hours, so basically 7:30 to 4:30. But first we sorted the responsibilities that someone would be on the desk taking the calls, and someone would be going out doing the technical support.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found out, it gets really stressful and boring on the desk, and it made more sense for people to know what would be happening if they were a technician going out and doing the job. That made them a much better person on the desk. They could ask better questions, resolve some things right on the phone.
Yeah.
So pretty soon we had a pretty good cadre of technical people who spent either one to two shifts on the desk, and then the rest of the time they would be out in the field, if you will, out on campus into the offices of faculty and staff, and then also working a little bit in the student labs. That's kind of how that evolved.
Uh-huh. And the database, was it just like problems that you would have?
We had the fields so that we could fill in who the caller was, what the request was,
okay.
And who it was assigned to. Of course, the day it came in and the time and all mm-hmm. of that. So we kept that in the database, and we could always go back and look. We're always going to try and do a knowledge base, you know, using the solutions to the problems.
Mm-hmm.
But running a knowledge base is really pretty complicated. It takes a lot of maintenance. So we didn't ever formalize that, but we could do searches on, say, keywords or whatever.
Yeah, I'm doing a database for the Forest Service historical program right now. That's an interesting process.
Is it a knowledge base for that kind of thing? Or
They have slides. They have thousands of slides that aren't... I'm putting them in archival safe.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeves and stuff, and then cataloging them and then putting them in this database so that the engineering staff can go in and type in Redwood Visitor Center or something and have stuff come up. So that's
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Wow.
That's one thing I teach in my intro class, is data is not just text or numbers.
Yeah.
It can also be images or video clips or whatever. So.
An interesting process to get one of those going. Lots of trial and error.
How many images do they have that you're working with?
I probably guess at least 4,000.
Wow.
That we found. They keep popping up all over the place, so it's been interesting. What would you say? Sorry, got off the subject. What would you say was your biggest challenge with getting this going?
Well, for one thing, those who were providing support probably ended up doing that because they enjoyed helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And convincing them that the request needed to come through a central place.
Mm-hmm.
That was one issue, because that would feed their ego, or, you know, what their greatest need was to help people. It would feed that by having the calls come directly to them. But then I have this huge fairness bone in my body, you know, and so people who call in, it shouldn't be matter how important the person was. What really should matter is the depth of the problem, how many was it, and the breadth, how many it was affecting, and the time, you know. So it was more fair for people to go through a central number and then have that assigned out on a kind of a priority way, in a priority way, rather than just having being able to go to someone new and getting quicker service. So that was kind of an issue. The other thing was that we really were in a transition. When the CIO came, like I said, there was a lot of support going on campus, a lot of computing going on campus, but it wasn't really centralized and coordinated. And when the CIO came, he had great visions of what we could be, you know, could be doing with technology on the campus. Change is hard for some people, and they'd been used to working basically a 7:30 to 5 o'clock job, maybe, you know, and I mean that type of thing. But as we had more technology and people depended on it more, we actually needed more coverage, quicker response, all those kinds of things. So up till that time, I don't think they really had people on pagers, you know. They did for the mainframe, and most people normally worked at night and then would have pagers in case they needed them other times. But the day people, it just took a different mind shift to understand that with all of this new technology coming on, we really did have to have more people responding and more quickly. So when you do a help desk, you try and get service level agreements. In other words, I might go to a department and say, how quickly can you respond to these, you know, requests and those kinds of things, and some just didn't want to be pinned down. So there was kind of a mind shift there. People out on campus too had been used to, some of them used to calling their friends to come and help them. They didn't want to go through a central number. So it took some convincing, and it probably has never really been totally overcome that they should go through a central number. So those kind of, just kind of a mind shift in the way things were being operated and how they needed to be more efficient.
I'm going to ask you a silly question. What does CIO stand for?
Chief Information Officer.
Okay, I thought it was something like that.
Yeah.
But just thought I'd make sure. Did you feel was the greatest success?
My forte is not my technical depth. My forte is hiring good people. And I felt I put a program in place for the technicians so that as they passed off different skill levels, they could get more money. In theory, they could do that, you know, pass off a level every day and get a 50 cent per hour raise, but most of them didn't. You know, I'd have to remind them, don't you want a raise? You know, you need to pass these next things off. And so, I guess it was just the total organization of it. Some departments or even colleges they wanted their own technicians. But the dilemma with that is, if they had their own technicians, then they weren't in the loop with the main computing that was going on campus. And so, I came up with a program, I called it Tech in Residence. So we would hire a technician with the department or college, and we'd hire those together, then we would pay that technician to be on the desk for one desk shift, and we'd pay their training. Then the department would pay the actual working hours. And what that did was relieve me from trying to make sure that the technicians out in the field, responsible to specific departments, saved me from telling them, organizing their work for them. In other words, for instance, the dean of social and behavioral sciences, we had a tech in residence. Well, he then could say to that tech, these are my priorities for your work. And where I felt very strongly, like I told you, it depended on the problem itself. If a dean or a department chair or division, you know, manager wanted it differently than that, they could. So I think that was fairly successful. And yet, by having the technicians do the time up on the desk, the network group, for instance, got to know them and then would trust them. And if they called in over the phone and needed something done from the network department, they would do it. If they didn't know you, they wouldn't. You know, I mean, they just wouldn't know these people. And we ended up with very good people. I had to fire a few technicians. It usually wasn't I never fired anyone for not being technologically adequate, because we would provide training, and if they made a mistake, because, you know, and did something wrong technology-wise, but were willing to learn from it and to help restore that mistake, they did not get fired for that. I had technicians who got fired because when they felt like they didn't want to adhere to our standard operations, they knew better, you know, if you will, or they did not get along with people and were quite arrogant and couldn't work with people. Probably the best technician I ever had was actually a very people person who happened to have the IS&T degree. And so he understood the technology and everything, but he was fantastic working with people, and he did the detail work. In other words, he'd close out his requests and all of that. Some just didn't want to do that, you know, paperwork, but that's important too.
Yeah. What does IST stand for?
Information Systems and Technologies.
Okay.
And that's this department.
Yeah, that's
pretty not sure. All of our technicians had technical degrees or were not pursuing technical degrees. Some were computer science, some were TB, and some were IS&T. But I even had some that went psychology and one was in art. So, but they happened to be very, you know, skilled in technology. Mm-hmm. When we hired these technicians, we had questions designed to one to see what their technical skills were, but the more important thing was how they would react to problems and different people. Mm-hmm. And so we had specific questions that we would ask, and it wasn't so much the answer as how it was answered.
Uh-huh.
And so we usually, if there were two people who had equivalent people skills, then the one who had also technology skills would have the edge, but that wasn't necessarily how we hired.
Mm-hmm.
It was more on the people skills.
Yeah.
Feeling you can teach technology, you can train on that basically, but you can't change personalities.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Very true. Mm-hmm. With the technician in residency, did you have a lot of problems with departments feeling like, well, this is more important for my department to have this fixed than something else, is that?
Well, they had total control of the technical support time.
Yeah.
Okay, so the student was obligated to his desk shift, he or she was obligated to the training. Mm-hmm. Other than that, the department scheduled their time, and they had total control of it. Now, there might be times when we, for instance, during Y2K time, we had different projects going on, and during the summer, for instance, we actually offered more hours, and we paid for those.
Mm-hmm.
So they still did their department work, but we were willing to pay another, say, 10 hours during the summertime when they were off to help get some special projects.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be those cases, but if we were offering any extra time, which the university doesn't really like during the regular terms, if we were offering those extra hours during the summer, I still worked with the department on that.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it wasn't imposing on their
time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. How long were you involved with the help desk?
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah, when I came back, it was 95, and I've been down here. Well, it's maybe 3.5 years, so probably 6.5 years
mm-hmm.
that I was there before I came down to teach in the ISD.
And with regards to just technology at Weber, how have you seen it evolve? How have you seen it just come along?
Well, you know, in the beginning, there were not that many PCs on campus.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, they cost a lot more money, and the system had basically been supporting terminals. In other words, they had the mainframe computer, mm-hmm. and then you had little terminals, no hard drive, nothing. It just all worked off of that mainframe.
Okay.
And so when we first started doing that, one of my first big projects was delivering, we got funding, not me, but the university had funding for 200 new PCs. That's unusual. Usually the department has to do their own replacement of PCs or, you know, buying them. But we got funding for 200 PCs. Actually, of that, there were probably 50 of those who were Macintoshes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were replacing 200 at one time.
Wow.
And the Windows machines coming in were going to be Windows 95, which had not been on campus, maybe here or there, but it hadn't been, you know, most people had Windows 3.1
yeah.
or DOS. And So we were delivering 150 new PCs, wanted it done before people left for the summer. That gave us 6 weeks from when they were delivered to when they would be delivered. Plus we were providing training to those people receiving the new PCs because they've never used Windows.
Yeah.
You know, the GUI before, the graphical user interface, they'd never used that before. Most of them never used a mouse. And so that was probably the first biggest project I had. And so we were delivering. The Macintosh people weren't an issue because it was so similar. They didn't have to have the training. Mm-hmm. And so that wasn't an issue. But the others, we would schedule with facilities a number of computers we were going to deliver. And usually it was in the same department or building, you know, a group of those. And the Friday before they got them, we would give them, call it just-in-time training. Mm-hmm. And so they would know kind of how to use their Windows 95 machines. And we arranged with the vendor that was providing the computers to come in on a Monday, remove their old computer, put the new one on. So they might be down for the better part and maybe an entire day, but that would be up. They'd be up and working by, you know, one day down, and then they'd be working again.
Yeah.
Before the help desk, and we had all of this organized, a person might get a computer and it might sit in their office for even weeks until they got someone there to set it up for them and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it really was quite remarkable that we were able to deliver that many, mm-hmm. that quickly, and especially in new operating systems.
Wow. So would you say it's been harder to develop technology at Weber, get the people used to the technology?
In all honesty, I think people looked at it that we didn't have money to buy technology. Mm-hmm. I actually have a book I have my class read, and it's called PeopleWare, and he talks about the hardware frontier, the software frontier, and the PeopleWare. The hardware frontier, it got to where it's pretty reliable, even Windows. I'm a Mac user by nature, but I'm just used to the Windows. Mm-hmm. But it became pretty stable, pretty, you know, it doesn't cost much anymore, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Software's got more usable, more friendly, more consistent, you know, from one to another. You know, the menus will have X things in them. But now it's the people where getting people to work together or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of that was the same issue. People thought it was the hardware holding them up, the money that they needed to buy the hardware. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was that way in the beginning. But then that's just become a part of doing business, is having the computer on your desk. And then it was getting software, you know, kind of a standard. What are we going to use and support? And because you can't support everything.
Yeah.
And then getting people used to, this is probably the biggest thing, is there will be problems in technology. Deal with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm one of those that didn't want to deal with it. That's why I used Macs in the beginning, because they were so stable. They were easy. I didn't have to learn all of the background and everything. So originally I used a Mac. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting on the help desk. Those who were technologically, you know, adept were actually more likely to be patient when there were problems than those who were very uncomfortable with it and who were, I guess you'd call them low-level users. They only used a little bit. Typically, it was kind of a checklist, you know, do this, do this, do this. And when that didn't work, they were just freaked.
Yeah.
You know, they were very upset. So those who knew technology better actually had a better time of dealing with the technology downtimes or glitches than the ones who didn't know that much about it.
So it's just like everything, if mm-hmm. you don't know anything about it, you're going to be afraid of it. You're not going to use it.
Right.
Yeah.
No problem. And I kept yammering on.
No, that's good. That's what we want. How have you seen that change the way that things work at Weber? Just, I mean, I've seen it go from catalogs that come in the mail to catalog that is now on the internet, and just it seems like more and more is on the internet. So I mean, How have you really seen?
Well, the availability of information is just, it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I get quite resentful myself when something's not available, you know, you know, at my fingertips, if you will. But I have to say, I'm also a, I like flipping, not just flipping pages, but having the ability to flip back and forth. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult for me, for instance, to read long papers for my students and grade them strictly on the computer. Mm-hmm. So I print them out. I print them out so there's two pages on one, you know, so yeah. I only print half as much, because I'm also an environmentalist.
Yeah.
But I'm a practical environmentalist, and so I still print out, which I think is still what a lot of people do. They want that paper back up in the file, you know, they want to be able to read and mark on it and those kinds of things. So I don't think we've become as paperless as we'd hoped, and in fact, people probably print out more because there is more available to print, I would guess. What was your question? I'm forgetting now.
Just how has technology just changed?
But the, like they're scanning documents so that they're available online to go back and look at. And the technology, for instance, I do a class online. In fact, I do three of them online. And the convenience for the students is phenomenal. The frustration level can be very high, especially mm-hmm. because we, you know, switch systems.
Yeah.
And that learning curve is always difficult.
Yeah.
So if a student's in that learning curve, and then this is my first time using Vista, well, it wasn't this in the fall, then that makes it hard for the students as well.
Yeah.
And it seems like no matter how much you prepare, because I went to classes, I kept doing things, thought I was prepared, and it just sort of hits you like a brick wall, and it's like, oh, I didn't understand that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that makes it more difficult for the students in that way. When students get upset about not being able to register during their, you know, appointment online, I do feel bad. I'd like to think there weren't downtimes or glitches or problems like that. But part of me isn't too sympathetic, because when I registered for college, you know, in the olden ages, mm-hmm. in the old ages, I used IBM punch cards. You would stand in line up at the automotive departments where they'd have tables with professors who had punch cards for the number of seats in their class. You'd stand in line, get up to, say, the English professor and say, I'd like to be in your 10 o'clock class. And say, oh, those are all gone, but I have a 9 o'clock opening. And so you'd take that, and then whatever you had for your 9 o'clock, like your history class, you'd run back over and see if you could get that at 8 or whatever. It was just gruesome. Mm-hmm. So when the touch tell came, where you could do it on the telephone, it may have been cumbersome to some, but for us old people, it was fantastic. And then to be able to go on the web and look what's available and how many seats left, I just think that's fantastic.
It is. It's great.
And it's helpful for the administrators and the faculty as well as the students. So mm-hmm. That's a great thing. I've seen technology wasted. People have generally good ideas to do things, and then what they don't realize that buying the hardware is really the cheap part of any project. Mm-hmm. The getting things going and maintaining, say, a lab, you know, that's the costly part. Mm-hmm. New software, upgrades, all that kind of stuff, that is the costly part. In my intro class, we talked about total cost of ownership. And in a lot of studies, they say that the total cost of ownership is only, that hardware is only 15% of that. So, you know, you pay $1,000 for a computer, but that's only 15% of what it's really going to cost to run that. And training is included in that, support. Some of those numbers are hard to define, but they're there. Mm-hmm. So.
It's not so foreign. It sounds like on divorce. So yeah. People can understand this. Well, just like you were saying, with the with people liking to have the paper and they just want to take it with them, do you think, like I've watched my younger siblings with technology, and they're just so much more comfortable and they do so much more than I can. And I'm just wondering, as like laptops become, it seems like more and more people are getting them, do you think that's going to change? Do you think people are going to stop printing things out and just take their laptop with them and be able to do it, or?
That really requires a huge shift in how you operate.
Yeah.
When I was in at the support desk before I came down here, we did a standard for desktop PCs. Mm-hmm. In other words, we said, here, here is what we want, and three vendors responded to that with what it would cost to buy from them. We put those on the web page, and then people could choose which of the three vendors. We didn't care.
Yeah.
But the basically, it was standard, the same amount of RAM, the same hard drive, and all of that, because to support as many computers as we have, the more standard you can be, the easier it is.
Yeah.
We actually create images so that you put them down on the computer, and so the settings are the same. Whatnot. Well, to do that, at least when we were doing it, it's getting better now, you had to have basically the same thing, or the image wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it going there? Oh, we got through setting standards for the desktop, you know, and it really was working well.
Mm-hmm.
People were happy with it. You know, the vendor could come in, switch out the computer in 2 hours. We'd follow right up with the vendor being there, and they could be operating, you know, maybe 4 hours down the halls.
Mm-hmm.
And we did all that scheduling too, by the way, through the help desk.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of my things. So we got all excited about that and thought, well, we're going to do a standard on laptops, because they were taking a lot of time to configure and support,
yeah.
And just people were buying anything. We got into it, and this is what we came to the conclusion: the technology on laptops actually changed faster than the desktops.
Yeah.
That they were portable only in the sense that they were lighter weight than desktops, but some of them, by the time people put on everything they wanted, you know, like all of the different drives and pack a keyboard with it, I mean, it was, you know, you might as well be packing a desktop almost.
Yeah.
And even though they were portable, they were actually more fragile, and
yeah.
To repair them was more costly.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually recommended people didn't get laptops.
Yeah.
And there's been a change in the thinking. People are getting laptops because professors pack them to the classroom,
yeah.
Plug them in, and go from there. They know they've got what they need on their hard drive, where sometimes they'd have a hard time logging into the network drive to get things, or it wasn't set up so they could, and you know, in the classroom. So I see people using laptops a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the younger people are the ones using laptops more than others. I see students bringing them to class, but I don't really see most of them taking notes on them yet.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few. They come right in, plug them in, and they're off and running. But that's a small minority right now.
Mm-hmm. Did you do the support for just like faculty and administration's laptops, or students that just went out and bought them? Would you do those?
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough resources to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And because they went out and bought their own, then they'd be quite far from what
yeah.
we would consider standard. And we just couldn't keep up with all of that.
Yeah.
They are, I think they're supporting students a little bit more because of the wireless networks they're doing in the dorms and stuff like that. So they're doing a little bit more, but you basically have to have a minimum configuration before they can. It's kind of funny, when we delivered the 95 computers, we're deciding how much RAM it should have. And I think we decided 8 megabytes of RAM. And because we looked, and Windows 95 needed, you know, X amount of RAM to be installed, and WordPerfect, which is our standard word processing, you know, needed X amount. But what we found out is it needed that to install it, but to run it happily, it needed far more than that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it was probably next year we moved to like 16 megabytes of RAM, you know, so.
And how many do computers have now?
Oh, like a gig. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't think any of them come without, probably 6, I think it's at 612. I forget the increment sometimes, but I think about 612. But
mm-hmm.
most come far more, because the memory isn't expensive. The RAM isn't as expensive
yeah.
as it used to be, and hard drives are far cheaper than they used to be. So kind of now, people just get as much as they can get for the price, you know, for the money they have.
Yeah.
The computer stayed approximately about $1,000, even now, because the hard drives are bigger and there's more RAM. You know, there's the zip drives on it and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So they are less than 1,000, but they stay fairly close to that. They haven't
yeah.
gone too far by the time you get all of those things.
How long would you say it took to get the help desk up and just running smoothly? up to where you just really felt like you had the glitches worked out, you had your system down? Or did you
I never felt, but there it came a time when I felt like we were doing good things, mm-hmm. and working fairly smoothly. The hiring for students was going well. Some full-time had left and new had come, and that one of those is Gail Nicholson,
uh-huh.
who is now the computing support manager, but she's got far more responsibilities too. They've added to her responsibilities
mm-hmm.
Since she took that job. So, and I think they're calling it technology services now,
mm-hmm.
not just computing support.
Yeah.
But probably 4 years, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still things that needed to be done, and we could do better and all of that. I went to a conference fairly early and learned a lot of things, but the thing I came home with was this. I was in a session and they were talking about this wonderful way they were operating, you know, with their help desk and doing all of this. And I was just sort of getting sick inside because I thought, oh, we're so far away from that. And then someone asked that question, you know, how long did it take you to get to this point? She said, 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I thought, well, then we're not doing too badly.
Yeah.
So that helped to hear that this does take a long time to
mm-hmm.
get things working smoothly. Yeah. So.
Were all of the technicians, was everybody working there? Were they all students, or did you have?
Well, we had three full-time staff.
Uh-huh.
Well, at any given time, they kind of would reorganize, and some would end up more there. But generally, only students manned the help desk. They were like the front line.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And they were the ones that went out in the offices. Now, if they had a problem, they'd call back. There was one of our full-time staff that was specifically over the hardware and the images for the PCs. And so they would call back into him, or he'd go down and help them.
Mm-hmm.
So the full-time staff were available kind of that way, but the students were the front line.
How long would you say the average student stayed?
We would not hire them unless they could stay at least 1 year, and we preferred two
mm-hmm.
at least, and three was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did, I got one student that came as a freshman and stayed his whole 4 years. He was unusual. Most of them came after they'd been there maybe a year
mm-hmm.
or two. But so all of them stayed at least 1 year, and many of them stayed two and three,
mm-hmm.
and a couple, 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. He actually was so fresh that when he came, his dad came with him to his interview.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was very young
uh-huh.
and fresh out of high school. And a part of me thought, I don't know if I want to hire a person whose parent comes with them. So I excused the dad and talked to the young man. Well,
mm-hmm.
And it was fine.
Yeah.
He was one of our greatest. I mean, he really was great.
That is neat.
Yeah.
Do you have any students that were there in the beginning that still work here today? Or?
Oh, many work on campus that have been technicians in computing support. Oh, yeah, we've got...
I'd like to interview some of them.
Would you?
Too.
Okay,
yeah.
I can give you a list.
Okay.
Some are in the IT division now.
Mm-hmm.
Others are in student support services.
Mm-hmm.
In accounting services, we have them all over on campus.
Oh, that's really neat.
Yeah, it is.
Really
I think some students want to get out, make big money, and go
yeah.
away, and all of that. Others are really happy within the academic environment.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay, I'm just making sure I'm not going over.
Okay.
And I lost it again. Sorry.
Okay.
So most of them are still working in the technology department. Do you have any that...
I don't know about most of them, but a significant
okay.
number are.
Okay.
Have stayed at Weber State.
Mm-hmm. That is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be it. I think it may be. If I have more questions, would you be okay with a follow-up interview?
Sure.
Okay.
You want it on tape or email is not good? Email's easier for me.